Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, folks. Michael Zuber, One Rental at a Time. This is our Saturday deep dive on seller financing with the one and only and amazing CPA, Bob Langworthy from Maine Bean Counters. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Absolutely. So thank you for giving us some time on a Saturday. I know you have lots of commitments, and it's thankfully it's not tax season, at least not major tax season. So thank you for this.
You're welcome.
So I want to do a couple of things, but before we do that, we'll give you several opportunities to do it. But please introduce us to who you are, your company, where people can find you, all of that stuff, so I don't forget.
Sure. Yes. My name is Bob Langworthy. I'm an enrolled agent. Enrolled agents are the tax experts of the tax professional world. They're EAs and CPAs. I have a couple of CPAs that work with me on the team. I'm located in Maine, but I serve clients throughout the nation. And I am a real estate investor myself. So I completely understand why people want to get invested in real estate and a lot of the ins and outs. And been on before and talked about some of the ways in which Congress has incentivized us to invest in real estate. And I think we'll be hitting on some of those things today, as well as the fantastic concept of seller financing.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, folks, if you don't know, all of the folks watching this live are members of the course. Bob and I have talked about seller financing. It is one of the bonus section, but we are going to hit it again here. And again, where can people find you? I don't know that you said that.
They can find me at mainebeancounters.com. That's Maine, like the state. Beancounters.com is our website. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of us. I am on most of the big social media platforms, LinkedIn, Bob Langworthy, or Bean Counter Bob.
Oh, Bean Counter Bob. I don't remember that one.
Yep.
That is awesome. And if you needed any more references or attaboys, the Lumberjack Landlord, the one and only, sings your praises. He is
a wonderful,
huge Bob Langworthy fan. He wanted to make
Matt's
sure.
A great guy. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you to the Lumberjack Landlord.
Yeah. And again, he's part of the course, one of the experts. You know, he's on the cusp of being unemployed, but we have to continually send him the Pink Panther to remind him that he's not yet unemployed. That's an inside joke if he's listening. But Bob, what we're going to do here is we're going to pull up a spreadsheet because we're going to dive into seller financing. You know that I've done these a couple of times. I believe it is going to be the way that most deals or many deals get done for the next couple of years, because as rates get to 6 and 7, 7.5, 8, it's going to be an important option. And I think people need to understand it. It is not magic. It is not illegal. It is, I think seller financing when done correctly is amazing because it is good for the buyer and good for the seller. So, and I think many people come to seller financing with the bias that it's good for them, the buyers. That's not how you get deals done. You get deals done by pitching it and understanding why it's good for the seller. So I'm going to bring up an Excel spreadsheet that you have. I will attach it to this video in the course so everybody can see it probably tomorrow, in fairness. But people will have access to this. But let me bring it up, Bob, so you can walk through it with us.
Great.
So set it up. What are we looking at here?
So this particular example, this is a seller who bought a property for $200,000 in 1996. They made some improvements to it. So they've got $400,000 into the property, and they've taken depreciation of around $300,000. So their basis is $100,000.
Yeah. So let's get everybody oriented. So we're over on the left side. We're basically column B, row 9. They bought a home. They bought a property for $200,000. In 1996. Okay. Then, so in this example, the improvements was not over the duration. You're basically saying in 2000, they dropped another $200,000. It makes it easier to understand.
Yeah,
right?
Just for the sake of the math. Yeah. They dumped a bunch of money, you know, made it into a decent, however many unit that it is, right, and have been renting it out ever since.
Okay. Now let's talk about depreciation, right? $300,000. Yep. Remind people what that is.
So with depreciation, you can take part of the value of the purchase price of the property and take a portion of that over 27 and a half years, straight line depreciation for residential property. You can't depreciate the land value. So again, this is just an estimate here, but that's $300,000 I put in for depreciation just to keep the numbers round. Mm-hmm. So their basis now the property is down to $100,000 should they sell it. So it's not the $400,000, you got to back out the depreciation. It's down to $100,000 should they look to sell this property.
Yeah. And this is one of the questions, again, a lot of people that are pitching seller financing, we just lost them. They're like, one thing they might be thinking is, why do I care about this? Well, you need to care about this because the seller is going to care about this. The seller's going to care about this because it's going to impact their taxes, mm-hmm. right? Because again, if they, again, I'm just going to make up numbers. All right, actually, you have them there. So let's not make up numbers.
Sure.
You're basically saying, if I understand what you have here, you're going to sell it for $1.2
million. Mm-hmm. That's correct. So they have a gain of $1.1 million.
But let's stop right there because again, sure. I think we could lose people. But how can I have a $1.1 million gain when I bought it for $200 and I invested $200? Isn't my gain only $700? What the hell? You're cheating?
Exactly, right? That's what you would think. But the IRS says, well, interestingly, it says you have to take depreciation on a rental property. Mm-hmm. So even if you hadn't taken it, your basis would only be $100,000. Now, the right. benefit of depreciation is it's what we call a non-cash expense. You get to take this as an expense. I'll use air quotes. Mm-hmm. on your tax return against the income, even though you're not actually writing a check for depreciation out of your checkbook. Mm-hmm. So it is a great benefit to real estate investors. Mm-hmm. But in this case, yes, they've taken $300,000 of the depreciation. So their basis is now 100 at mm-hmm. $1.2 million in sale price. They have a potential gain of $1.1 million.
So again, let's just bring it this full circle with real life examples that I've been mm-hmm. through. A lot of the sellers that I work with, their basis is zero. What does that mean, Bob?
Well, that means they've taken all the depreciation. Ideally, you don't depreciate the land. So, you know, it could be a condo, it could be something like that where they've got, or, you know, maybe they got it from family. It's been passed down to them. They don't even know the basis. Maybe the basis was even less than this 400 mm-hmm. to begin with. So there are a lot of different ways they could have close to no basis whatsoever.
And you're always going to have land to your point. Right. But the idea here is, again, folks, a lot of the people that you and I will be working with over the next couple of years, they're going to quote unquote own it free and clear. Mm-hmm. That's bank vernacular. They're also going to likely have depreciated it to quote unquote zero, which basically means land value is left.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know, that is a huge tax ramifications. So let's talk about depreciation recapture again, getting everybody focused on the screen. That is row B16. Yep. This is something that most people don't understand. This depreciation recapture, is money that basically the IRS wants back.
You got it. So because you have received the benefit of depreciation on the property over the course of owning the property, the IRS says, oh, when you sell it, we want to tax that benefit that you have received. And so in this case, again, they had taken $300,000 of depreciation. So they have to pay tax at up to 25% on that depreciation. So when you guys actually get your hands on the spreadsheet, you'll be able to see how all the formulas for these three types of tax feed down into the $327,000 total. But a portion of the tax that this seller would have to pay is on the depreciation recapture. So that's of the $1.1 million in long-term capital gain. We're now going to divide that into two buckets. The depreciation recapture piece is the $300,000 mm-hmm. at 25%. Moving on, should I move on to the long-term capital gain?
Actually, quick question about depreciation recapture, because I actually don't know this one. Is it a flat rate? Everybody pays the same, or does it scale on income? Or
it is not. It scales on income and pretty quickly gets to 25%.
Oh, so 25 is the peak though?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. All right, mm-hmm. cool. Yep. All right. Yeah, you can go to long-term capital gains now.
LTCG is long-term capital gains tax. So because this property has been owned for more than 1 year, the capital gain is considered long-term. And I have 27% in here. That is state-specific for where I'm at. So long-term capital gain has effectively three rates, 0%, 15%, and 20%. You get to the 20% bucket when you're at income of around $400,000 and up.
Okay.
And then depending on what state you're in, I happen to be in Maine, we're at around 7%. That's why I've got 27%.
So you're including the state.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, for everybody on the call today, you can go ahead and change that.
Whatever you want.
Cells can be changed to whatever your rate is.
Okay.
So you could just put in a flat 20 or you know whatever the number is for you. So now how do we get to that 800,000 for long-term capital gain if we thought it was 1.1 million? Mm-hmm. Well, the long-term capital gain gets divided. 300,000 is the depreciation recapture. Then the remaining 800,000 gets the long-term capital gains treatment.
Yeah. So let me kind of walk it back for folks. Cause again, some people are looking at 300, 800 and wondering what happened to the rest, which is 100 grand. That's the basis that you didn't depreciate. That's your cost essentially, right? And you don't have taxes on your cost basis. That really could say cost basis right there.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. Now, what the hell is NIIT?
Yes. Oh, this one is another one of those surprise ones. So you've got the depreciation recapture that is a surprise kick in the teeth, and then the net investment income tax. So back when Obamacare was passed, this was a funding mechanism. And this is for any kind of investment income over $250,000.
Now, that just because I want to ask, is that $250,000 in a particular year or a particular asset?
It's in a particular year.
Oh, so if you did and two sales and you added them together.
Yep. And it's over. So the $250,000 is your income. So if your income is over $250,000,
I got it.
You have investment income.
Got it. Okay.
So this is a little bit of a, you know, the $950,000 figure is close to what it would be in terms of how much would be subject to the 3.8%.
Got it.
But that's an additional tax that you've got that we're adding on to this just to get as best a ballpark figure as we can for what this seller would end up paying in tax.
Yeah. So folks, again, why is this important to understand? Why is this important to practice? I've basically on the back of a piece of paper or even I think one time a restaurant napkin kind of penciled this out. And in fairness, I forgot the NIIT. What year, when did that come about?
Boy, it was in Obama's tenure. So it must've been in the early 2013, 14, 15 ish, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I think I did a deal after that. So again, I even forgot about the extra 3.8% or forgot, didn't know, whatever it was, but
yeah,
that's again, this is why. And again, when you understand this, you really can pencil this out in front of a seller, right?
Yep.
Just to educate them and then let them take it. They should go validate with their own folks. So the other thing I want to point out, folks, if you haven't seen it already, row two and row three, that is Bob Langworthy's website. And also he is crazy enough listed his phone number. So if you want to reach out or and there you go. It's there now.
Yep.
All right. So keep going. Sorry.
So then the cell that it just says tax and the 327,100, there's a formula in there that's doing the math for those three types of tax, adding all of those up. So in this scenario, with a $1.2 million sale price, a long-term capital gain of $1.1 million, this seller is going to end up with $327,000 in tax, which means the net cash to seller, there's the formula, is not $1.2 million, it's $872,000. And there are a couple of pieces that I left out of this spreadsheet just to keep it very high level. I didn't put in whether the seller has a mortgage or not. And I didn't put in any closing costs because those can vary widely. Certainly anyone can edit this spreadsheet and add their own.
It's just them for them to play with. Yeah.
But the important piece to note on this is that in this scenario with a $1.2 million sale price, the seller only gets $873,000.
Yeah. So again, folks, this is again, what is coming? You need to understand, you need to play with this. These are nuanced. I've added the cells again. Everybody that follows this will get this in there. These are other questions to ask, mm-hmm. right? Do they have these things? And then get estimates. Cause again, you know, 872, then they're going to have minus the mortgage debt, minus some closing costs. Cause when you do seller financing the right way, you give them a decent approximation. And hey, if you sell this cash, which again, it doesn't have to be cash. It could be a note, but it's basically cash to the seller. You're not going to get 1.2. Some of them, again, most of the sellers that I speak with, you know, they know they're going to have selling like real estate commission. They know they're going to have closing costs. So most of the sellers, when I ask them, hey, you're going to sell this for 1.2 million. What do you think you're going to get? Oh, you know, I'm going to get 1.2, 1.1. I'm like, you don't pay taxes? I mean, really? Oh, never even thought about it. I'm like, well, let me walk you through. Mm-hmm. And let me just tell you that 872 is not 1.1. That is eye-opening. And that is the opportunity.
Yeah.
That is the opportunity. So, okay, sure. Let's go over to the buyer side and talk about what you've done here as just an example.
Sure. So this is, again, 1.2 million is the purchase price. Mm-hmm. With conventional financing, let's assume this is a multifamily. It's going to be a 20-year note. So they have to put down 20%. They have a $240,000 down payment. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to borrow $960,000. Okay. The green cells for the term and the rate, you can put whatever you want in there. I have it as a 20-year at 6.75%. Maybe that's high. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But for sake of example, it's really instructive to see what the payment will be, the annual debt service, mm-hmm. and most importantly, how much this will cost the buyer over the life of the loan. Mm-hmm. It costs the buyer nearly $2 million because of all the interest they're paying on that mortgage. And so the real opportunity is the difference between the $2 million that the buyer pays.
Sorry, I just changed it to 30 years. Oh my God, 2.5.
It's even worse. Yeah, right? And okay, so you can, you know, maybe it's not 6.75%, maybe it's 6%. It's still painful to look at. So now everyone can see the opportunity exists between what the buyer is willing to pay. This buyer, what you got on the screen is saying, I'm actually willing to pay $2.4 million.
Over 30 years.
And the seller's over on the other side of the table saying, I'm only getting 873. Yeah. Can we get somewhere in the middle? Mm-hmm. How can I, the seller, get more money and you, the buyer, pay less and we both win? And that's what the lower example, as we scroll down, looks at. How can we get to a better point in this for both the buyer and the seller so that the seller comes out with more money in their pocket, the buyer's in a much better position to have a nice cash flowing asset. The only person who gets hurt is the realtor, because now we're going to lower that sale price.
Oh, you want it lower? You don't want it?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Okay. And I use 875 intentionally.
Okay.
And again, this can be any number. You guys can monkey around with this all you want. But I did 875 because it's really interesting to see what happens. In the first example, mm-hmm. it was a sale price of 1.2 million.
Yep.
And that seller was only going to end up with around 875.
Now,
if we make the sale price 875, how much does the seller get?
Okay. Well, we'll do it your way and then I'm going to do it my way. But let's see what you got.
Great.
All right. So, okay.
All the same assumptions now from up above. I have a couple of dates in there. My dates don't really matter. The 1989, the 1990. I guess I use different dates. Those should be the same. It doesn't really matter. It gets the same basis.
Yep. Same basis. Yep.
Now we're saying the sale price is 875. Mm-hmm. So our long-term capital gain is only 775,000. Down from $1.1 million.
Yep, I see that.
Very important to note. I'm going to move past the installment sale amount for right now so we can look at the tax piece.
Yep.
The taxes now, instead of having taxes on $1.1 million, we have taxes on $775,000.
Right, which is these two numbers. Yep.
So your long-term capital gain, you'll see that in, oh, I lowered the depreciation recapture from 25% to 22.
Okay.
I lowered the capital gain as well from 27 to 22, because now most of that long-term capital gain will fall into the 15% bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And because instead of getting all of this, and the reason it falls into the 15% bucket, I should just take a step back and not skip over that, is because instead of receiving all of this cash at once,
it's installed.
The seller is going to receive it over 20 years. So they're not receiving $475,000 in 1 year of long-term capital gain.
Yeah, so
receiving that over 20 years.
Yeah, so folks, you've heard me say this a couple of times. And again, when I say these things, we have to realize it's good for you and good for them. I've told you many times, I ask all sellers, what are you going to do with the cash? For most of them, I would say 80% or so when I ask that, they will admit some way or somehow that a big influx of cash is a problem.
Yes.
Think about that. Mm-hmm. $800,000 in the first example, almost 900. It's a problem. There is a better way. Turn it into an installment loan. Get income. Treat, you know, make them the bank.
And that's what most retirees want. They
want mailbox money.
Yep. And that's what this gives them. So you no longer are in the 20% tax bracket for the long-term capital gains. You're in the 15%, because that $475,000 of long-term capital gains, instead of hitting all at once, you only pay tax on the money that you've received. And they're receiving it over the course of 20 years.
Exactly.
You'll also see in this example, there is no net investment income tax, because now they don't have this massive amount of income coming in.
Yeah, the one-time windfall. Yep.
Yep. So the tax drops from $327,000 to $170,000. Net cash to seller. That number at the bottom is the really interesting number to look at. Because you might think, well, we sold it for $875,000 and $170,000 in tax. They should get $700,000, and they're not getting as much. Mm-hmm. But they are the bank in this example.
Exactly.
And they, instead of getting $875,000, they're getting, if we look at the buyer side, $1.3 million.
Yeah, right here.
Because they're serving as the bank. Now you take that $170,000 out of the 1.3, and they're left with 1.164 million. The only piece that's not in here, again, it's a small amount, and it's dependent on their situation, is how much income tax they would have to pay on the interest.
Right.
There's a lot of detail you could throw into a spreadsheet like this.
No, this is high level. No, this is great.
And then you can see what I used for terms for this. Instead of having to put 20% down,
10%.
They agree to 10%. That right away saves the buyer a substantial amount of money, because it was $240,000 they were going to have to put down before. Mm-hmm. Now it's only $87,500. They decided on 20 years at 5%. You can put whatever terms you want in here. One of the people in the comment section said they are watching a home from a home that they purchased with seller financing at 0% interest.
Nice. I've done one of those. Those
well
are
done. So you could put 0% interest in there in your own example if you wanted to and see what that does for you. So now you can see the massive differences from up above to down below. Yeah. The seller is getting 300 and I can't do that math that quickly.
Yeah. Another,
almost 300,000 in cash.
Yeah. Something. Yeah.
291 additional cash. The buyer is saving $1 million over the life of the loan.
Yeah. You're getting a higher yield if you're in my course, because you're putting less down, right? The down payment is less. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And again, So again, seller financing, very powerful. You need to understand this spreadsheet, the story. Let's actually just pretend like it, because again, I guess I need to slow down. My brain is going too fast. So I talked about an example a couple of times over the last weeks where I've told people that a seller handed me $500,000. It was because of a deal like this. The property was worth, here in this example, 1.2 million, but we agreed to 875. That's what, $325,000 equity, assuming it's the same property.
Yep.
In our example, they handed us $500,000. We added terms, basically in this example, the seller doesn't want to prepay.
Right.
So you add the prepayment clause and all of those things, but work it out with the seller. But all these things are possible, and it just is nuances, understanding, kind of if you sell for cash or a bank note, you're going to only get 872. You actually sell for less, but you net more and you pay less taxes. And, you know, these are all the great conversations. So, you have a summary down here, I believe. Here we go.
Yeah. And again, this is just, part of how we look at this, right? We want the seller to understand that this really is in their best interest. So they get an additional $291,000 in cash.
Yep.
Over the life of the loan, they're getting $1.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting more than their asking price. The buyer is saving money, from the life of the loan, the down payment, and the buyer is getting improved cash flow on a monthly and annual basis. So it's this huge win-win, all around. The challenge is, how do you have that conversation with that seller?
Could I add this? Seller avoids taxes. Could I do that math too?
Yeah, sure. Yep. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Yeah, that's a simple one to put in there. Back to the question that Michael asks of sellers, what do you plan to do with the cash?
Mm-hmm.
There is a considerable amount of fear with older Americans about what is going to happen with the money that they have invested. And it's why so many look at Social Security as this secure income they know they're going to have every month. Now we have this record-breaking COLA adjustment coming, 8.8%. That's wonderful. But to many Americans, $800,000 that they would receive in the seller financing example is riskier than receiving a guaranteed check every single month.
And again, it's a secured position.
That's right. If in this case, if the buyer defaults on the loan 10 years down the road, the seller has made monthly income every single month, and now they own the asset and they can sell it.
Yeah. Again.
So it's completely safe for them to do. And they've got that guaranteed check coming in every single month, which is what that's what security feels like when you're retired. It's that mailbox money that we're all looking for. But now move yourself in the position of a 70-year-old and you're really counting on that money. And if they get the $872,000, where are they going to go to get, in this case, $62,000 every year on their 872?
Yeah.
That's a tall order.
Yeah, the whole key to getting comfortable with seller financing is to practice this, use real life examples. Again, as you see me doing my marketing, I'm looking for people with more than 60% equity. Some of you might want to look for 100% equity. Doesn't matter. You have to understand these benefits. They get better cash. They get income. They avoid taxes. Let's not forget, remove headaches, right? They're not the daily operators.
Yep. Yeah, that's probably why they're looking to move on with the property anyway. Yep.
So again, there's lots and lots of benefits. And then you, the buyer, you can get creative, right? Control the down payment. I think the smallest down I did was 7%. I think I've done 15%. I've only done 30 years. Right. Look at what happens there. Woo, net cash goes up to $500,000. Gotta like that.
Yeah.
You can do better rates.
Yep.
So again, all these green sales are, you can play with these. And again, Matt, the lumberjack landlord, again, who sings your praises, he's just shared a deal yesterday on his channel, that he got 2.5% on a loan.
Right.
So again, in second position in this case. So lots and lots of things are possible.
Yeah.
So, actually, let me save this so I don't forget, because it will go with this video. All right. So let's see what kind of questions we have. I always go to the top and we go down. Hey, Roldan, how are you? Thanks. Oh, look at the lumberjack giving some love. Bob is the best EA. Can you tell us what the difference between an EA and a CPA is? Again, I get confused.
Yeah, no problem. An enrolled agent gets their license directly from the IRS and is qualified and authorized to prepare taxes in all 50 states. A CPA gets a state-level certification and can prepare taxes in that state and any state that has reciprocity although many CPAs don't do taxes because they'll do auditing and reviews and those types of things. Whereas an enrolled agent is only taxes. An enrolled agent is always a tax expert.
So why is this important for you one rental at a time? The most common question I get is, who is an accountant that you know, respect, and work with that I can use? Right there. Bob Langworthy, the main Bean Counters. If you're a real estate investor and you hope to be working with a real estate or an accountant that does hit, actually does this. And oh, by the way, let's not forget, Bob Langworthy got a shout out on the Daily Financial News because he got one of these cards. He got one. He really does this.
Yep.
I think it was a fourplex you bought, right?
We closed on a fourplex last week.
Yep. Yeah. So again, folks, he not only is somebody that we know and trust on this channel, the Matt, the Lumberjack Landlord, and I, he can work in all 50 states. I can't tell you how many times people go, "Hey, I live here. Who can I use?" And it's like Maine Bean Counters, Maine Bean Counters. So there you
Thank
go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Rylus, I would like to ask about depreciation recapture from the seller when they sell on terms. So I think we've covered that. That's from Rylus.
Yes. Good. I can answer that. We can just
go for it
briefly.
Please.
There is depreciation recapture whether you are selling traditional financing or seller financing. It would be on terms. It would be the same way that the long-term capital gains tax gets handled, in that you would only pay the depreciation recapture based on the gain you're receiving in that year. So what we were just looking at in that spreadsheet, and you'll see this when you monkey around with it yourself, is the installment sale amount. That's the amount that this seller is going to receive annually. Mm-hmm. It has changed now in this spreadsheet. It's $39,842. That's over on the left side, column B, looks like row 34, $39,842. So of that $39,842, a portion of that is the long-term capital gain and the depreciation recapture. So mm-hmm. it's a much smaller amount of depreciation recapture because that is also split out over all these years.
Yeah, let me try to say it my way. And of course, if I'm wrong, Bob, correct me. So depreciation recapture when they are doing seller financing, in this example, they would owe some year one on the down payment, right? $87,500 in this example,
yep.
Which is 10%. So above what was, or actually where does long, so depreciation recapture here is $300,000. So roughly 10% of that, am I doing the math right, would be year one?
Actually, let me take a step back because okay. I had this thought in the back of my mind. I'm like, you know what? I seem to recall that the depreciation recapture is an exception to this rule. And
okay.
it is.
Okay.
So with depreciation recapture, you take the entire depreciation recapture in the year that the deal starts.
Oh, okay.
And the rest of the long-term capital gain, you pay out over time.
As income is received.
And so the seller needs to receive enough in a down payment to cover the recapture
Perfect.
Of the depreciation.
I love that. So again, this is why you do the conversation. So you don't come mm-hmm. into one mm-hmm. of these deals with like zero down unless they right. got a big bank. You yep. got to make sure they're left whole. So again, just to repeat that, depreciation recapture is not like long-term capital gains where you Correct. Only pay portion as received. It is a year one hit.
In the year of disposition, we call it. Yep.
Well, that's fancy accounting talk right there.
So in this case, though, with this example, 22% on the 300,000, that's 66,000.
Correct. Yep.
And just a small amount of long-term capital gains to pay tax on. And in year one, they've received a down payment of 87,500 plus mm-hmm. whatever monthly payments have come in, depending on when right. they
when
did
it started.
Deal.
And then let me just ask you again about the interest rate, because again, the So let's just say the payments. What is the payment? 3320, and I'm just going to, for easy math, say 2000 is principal and 1320 is interest. That's obviously okay. not what it is, but that's this example.
Sure.
The $2,000, that's what you pay long term capital gains on because that is part of what you've held. But then there's interest payment of 1320. That's a different tax rate, correct?
Correct. That's ordinary income.
Correct.
To the seller. And that's going to be taxed based on the rest of their income picture.
Correct. So which could be very little or it could be high.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Very yep. cool. I like it. Thank you for that question. I think that was Rylus. All right. Let's go back to the top. Where did we go? Oh, I love all these questions. We're going to get through them all. Okay. Chester says, good morning. Jerneel, good morning. Roldan, does the seller provide a W-9 for the payments we issue them, either for principal or interest?
Yes. So the seller should provide a W-9. A W-9 is a form that just requests name, address, social security number of an individual. Mm-hmm. That allows you as the buyer to issue them a 1099 INT. That is the 1099 for interest payments that you would give to the seller on an annual basis, reporting the amount of interest that you have paid them, which they then report on their 1040 as income.
Yep. There we go. Eric, good morning. Thank you for your time, Bob. I'm in the Bay Area. How does 50-40-10 affect capital gains, 1031 exchange, depreciation recapture? Is it different from primary rental homes? So, Bob, I don't know if you've heard me talk about the 50-40-10. This is actually the program that Matt is using. 50% is a first mortgage, 40% is a second mortgage, 10% down. So 40% in this example is seller carry. So, Eric, 60% of this is cash to the seller. They don't care the bank or whatnot. So that's cash, which would be they're receiving. So that's would be tax treatment. The 40% would be the note in this example.
So this spreadsheet could be used to run the numbers. Oops. You may have to do them separately, you know, in two different columns. So right, with a 50-40-10 split like that, mm-hmm. you're still receiving a benefit.
Oh, 60%. Yeah.
Seller financing. Uh-huh. It's not as much of a benefit as having, you know, in our example here, 90% of it being financed by the seller, mm-hmm. but still a good benefit for both mm-hmm. the buyer and the seller.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then actually one question I had, what about a 1031 exchange with seller carry? Could they do, how would that work?
Okay. Let me go back. I had one thought on the 50-40-10.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead. Finish.
Why a seller may want to do that. Mm-hmm. In this example, the seller has had this property a long time and has no mortgage on it.
Right.
But it could be the case that the seller has only owned the property a few years, mm-hmm. has a mortgage on it, and therefore can't really do a seller financing situation.
Yeah. At least not for the full amount. Exactly.
Yeah. Not for the full amount. So that's where a 50-40-10 might come into play, where the seller still has some mortgage. They need that paid off at closing, but they'll mm-hmm. go ahead and finance the rest.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. This is why I created the 50-40-10 with Velocity Mortgage and Stephen Dow, my Friday expert, because I see a lot. I'm actually only marketing people with 60% equity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And also I'm marketing in a way to people who may be stuck on wish pricing. Right. Mm-hmm. I remember I could have sold it for 500 grand in February. Now I can only get this. Well, you know, I'll give you 500, but you got to carry a second at 1%. Because I only care about payment, right? Because I'm going to own it forever.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember paying a seller one time 125 for a 100K house. I didn't care. I got 1% interest. What do I mind? Yeah. What do I care, right? So
you see what Michael just did with that $500,000 example. He was basically saying, you set the price, I set the terms.
Exactly.
And then we're both happy.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Love it.
Just communicate with the seller.
Yep.
All right.
Let me go ahead and answer the 1031 question.
Yes, please.
Yep. With this. So mm-hmm. if you're a seller and you're going to do a 1031 exchange, you're not going to do seller financing.
Correct.
You're going to sell the property. You're going to use a qualified intermediary. You're going to buy your next property for equal to or more than the value of the one that you're selling mm-hmm. with a mortgage equal to or more than the property that you're selling.
Yeah. You don't
it's
mix
a different
those, yeah.
strategy. So seller financing is for the person that seller who just wants to be done and close
mailbox money
of their life.
Mm-hmm.
1031 exchange is for a real estate investor that's ready to move on to a bigger property and
correct.
Wants to defer paying
yeah.
capital gains.
Don't mix them. Exactly right.
That's right.
Primary versus rental home. Is there a difference for seller financing?
No, you could do this on a primary.
Well, the only difference would be you get the first 250 or 500 grand tax free though.
Yeah. Okay. As the seller. So if you were to sell,
that's the only difference.
You got that long-term capital gains exclusion of 250 or for single, 500 for married, filing jointly. So it may actually work to your favor to bring the price down a bit.
Yeah.
But still make money over time because mm-hmm. It's the long-term capital gain that has that exclusion.
Correct.
So in this case, you know, the long-term capital gain, example one is 1.1 million. It's 775 in the second. So that would be less to pay tax on. You could do it in a primary. I haven't seen somebody do this on a primary residence.
Yeah, but you could. But the only the only difference in all of this for me is that capital gains exclusion. That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
And I think I did buy somebody's primary once. But again, they were moving, I think, in with their daughters, I recall the story. But yeah, it can happen.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob and team. Can you share with us what capital gain benefits are to the seller for seller financing? They just delay. They basically take year one and they push it out. And then they also, because capital gains, our tax structure is, I don't know what, graduated. So if you can reduce that, lower your taxes. So it's benefit every year.
Yeah. So the big benefit is that the tax gets spread out over time, which allows some of it to be at a lower rate. So
a lot of it potentially.
That's right. Yeah. So instead of having it all in this, you know, one bucket in 1 year, it can be spread out over the term of the loan, reduces the amount of capital gains you're paying. So huge benefit to the seller.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there's a very few things that I find this consistent, but it's amazing when I have these seller conversations. They're obviously, generally speaking, older, usually over 60. Every single time, they're like, I hate the IRS. I'm like, well, let me show you a way you can pay them less.
I love it.
It's funny. It is so funny. Great. This is perfect. Thank you very much. Awesome, Victor. Awesome. On a CPA question. I do Airbnb. I think that's two BR. I don't know what that is.
Bedrooms?
Two bedrooms, maybe.
Yeah.
On three homes I live in and use 25% of the home. Oh, business office. Got it. I'm taking out trees, safety hazards. Per IRS public, said tree job needs a yard upgrade. I have no idea what this is. A detailed CPA question. Do you have enough there, Bob, to pick a swag?
So I'll restate what I think she's saying and then take a stab at it. So it sounds like she's got a house where it's a three bedroom home. She does Airbnb with two of the bedrooms and she uses 25% of the home for a business office. So now she has trees that need to be taken out and is asking, can that tree work be an expense?
Correct. That's what I think she's asking, yes.
So the safest way to do that would be to use those ratios that she's already using. So this home is being depreciated, some portion of it.
Some of it,
two,
yep.
Two bedrooms of the house is being depreciated. And she's got the home office. So let's say the tree job is $10,000 and she's got 30% of the house is being depreciated for the Airbnb and 25% for the home office.
Yeah.
So 55% of that tree work would be a business expense split between those two different items, the Airbnb and this home office. So that's a short way of saying, yes, an expense like that can be an expense to your Airbnb. Mm-hmm. Any work, if she's got someone that mows the lawn, plows the snow, the trash service, anything that's related to those items, Airbnb and the home office, some portion of that is reasonable to have as an expense.
Yeah. The key to all that, what I hear you saying, is you can't take it all against
that's
it because
right.
again, there is some personal use.
Yep.
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 Yep. I think that's very well said. Chester, what are some tax advantages, tax favorable ways to structure installment sale contracts via seller financing? It's just terms and payment, right? The longer the term.
Yeah.
Think about prepayment penalties. Again, I have found sellers that are handing me big chunks of equity, don't want to be prepaid because they feel like they lose that way. So stick the prepayment penalty out. Be sensitive to that. Yeah. Look at that. Rylus, 0% down. Rockstar. Rockstar. Installment sales work the same way a lottery ticket when he elects to receive 20 years. Is that true? I have no idea if that's a true statement. Is that how lottery winnings work? Is that do lottery winners claim winnings as income?
They claim it as income and they claim it in the year they receive it. So
same way. Okay.
Lump sum versus the annuity option. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. I haven't won the lottery yet, so I don't talk about things I haven't done yet. curious whether Bob would mind walking through an example of 50-40-10 with 1% seller interest from tax advantage perspective. We can try that. I don't know if
I think we talked about that in a high level. We can certainly kind of force it in the spreadsheet here.
Yeah.
Cody, was that Cody? That was
so basically
that was Chester.
Yeah.
Chester can go through this as well in a spreadsheet to see what it would be. This spreadsheet isn't designed to do a 50-40-10.
Yeah, no.
So you would want to, separately, over in, columns J through P or whatever, put in your figures for this is how much would be 50, this is how much would be 40, and plug those numbers in to see what that would look like. You could use the seller financing piece down below to calculate what the seller would get and some of the savings there. But this is, you would just want to double check your numbers to make sure that they pass the straight face test.
This is what I would do. Again, trying to do the 50-40-10. So again, what I would do is take this, which is the purchase price times 0.6. So basically in this example, they're going to get $525,000 at the closing table, obviously minus closing costs and all of that, and then this is going to be this minus this. So in this example, the remaining debt is going to be the seller second, right? So again, the first, remember the 50%, that's with a non-QM lender. So that's debt that has a payment, do whatever that is. Then the 350 is debt. So that has a payment. So in this example with Bob Langworthy, who's a tax guy, this is year one taxes. It's above the capital gains threshold. It's going to be the NIIT. It's above that. Lots of taxes coming because that number is above 400. They will get a note with whatever payment you decide. So I think that's enough for the 50-40-10. This is because again, seller gets 60 and they're carrying 40. So that's how you get to that. So.
Yeah, big picture though, just to answer, sure. I think we answered this previously. This is still a great benefit to the seller because mm-hmm. that $350,000 they're not paying taxes on all in one year, and that's huge. Plus, they get that monthly payment coming in. It's a benefit to the buyer because instead of having all of that 90% at 5% mm-hmm. or whatever the note would be, they're having 40% of it at only 1%. So it's a cash flow advantage to the buyer as well.
All right, Cody, we've got an example where one of your peers, I don't know, I guess CPA, I guess you're an EA, so I don't know if CPAs are peers or not, but anyways,
sure. Yep.
Their CPA is really hung up on depreciation recapture, and it's actually probably because of your earlier statement. There's that big tax hit year one because it's not like capital gains.
Sure.
I'm guessing. Yep. You only should do it on land. What's a good way to handle that situation? Should I suggest talking with a new CPA who is more versed in seller financing?
So a couple of things to consider with this. Mm-hmm. We're only talking about dollars and cents. Like at the end of the day, all of this is just dollars. And so this seller just needs enough dollars to cover that tax one way or another. And with seller financing, the seller is going to get more dollars than they would if they did traditional financing. Yeah. So the issue might be the amount of the down payment.
Could be.
Is a factor in this.
Maybe right, it's not big enough to cover the tax burden. Yep.
Isn't sufficient to cover the tax burden, right? You may want to talk with, they may want to talk with another accountant. That's fine.
No, let's step back. So we got to be careful here, right? You're dealing with a seller who's owned this 20 unit property building for a while, probably has a personal relationship with their CPA. My CPA after 3 or 4 years is a family friend, and I've had the same guy for 20 years, right? I mean, you get to know your CPAs. So to come in arrogantly and tell them, no, your CPA is an idiot, it's probably not the right strategy.
Right.
Let's be clear. So what I would do is I would call Bob Langworthy. I would say, how much for an hour of your time? And I would have their CPA talk to Bob. And I would give Bob all the details so Bob can work up a spreadsheet and just have CPA to CPA conversation.
Exactly. Yep.
That's what I would do.
Yep, that is a good option, or could be just a matter of sharing, some more of the numbers of what the deal looks like. It could be that the CPA doesn't have all the information, and that's why they're hung up on it.
Well, maybe. My experience with CPAs is, and again, this guy is a 20-unit complex, so we should not assume it's just somebody who takes W-2s or whatever, 1099s, and that's it. They probably have some experience, but my experience with a lot of CPAs and frankly attorneys, like when you're doing estates and whatnot, is real estate is something like you're either in the weeds and it's like your vernacular, or it's like this one-off thing that you talk about once a decade.
Yeah.
And you just got to figure out what you're dealing with. So,
And there's also information that we don't know here with this. So
of course,
this 20-plex.
How long have they had it?
Hasn't been owned a long time, but maybe they did a cost segregation study and took a lot of appreciation.
Ooh, that could be.
They might really need a lot of cash up front to cover that bill.
That's a great point. Cost seg the last couple of years. That's the whole, I'm going to take an extra, I'm going to make it up 30% year one. And that's just going to blow this out, right?
That's pretty close. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oof, that could work. Yeah. Can you add a seller note to a trust or a will? If you are the seller, absolutely. It's an asset. It's just an asset and part of your estate, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If an owner passes away, can the beneficiaries take over seller financing, qualify stepped up tax basis in California?
Okay. I'll answer
half the question.
I'll answer this as best I can. So the contract should be written up so that it's the seller and their assigns are the ones who are receiving the payments. So it wouldn't be a problem for the estate to start receiving those payments.
Okay.
A step up in basis, no, because the property has already been sold.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there, you couldn't get a step up.
Yeah. The heirs don't have any rights to the property because that's been deeded to Joe Schmo. Yeah.
So a step up in basis, just real quickly, if I have a duplex that's, I bought it for 100 and I put 100 into it and now it's worth 500.
Yeah.
I pass away, my kids inherit it. They are inheriting it at the value that it is as of my date of passing.
But yeah, the stepped up basis wouldn't matter in this example because it's not. Yeah. So it's, yeah.
So that's what a step up in basis is, but this property has already been sold. So there is no step up in basis.
Yeah. You just cross that out, but they will. There'll be beneficiaries. They will get the notes. And I've actually had, I think it's only happened once. One of my seller financing passed away. I got the right documents from the state, and we just wrote the check to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So it can be owned. Great. Oh, that's Rylus. Rylus is our Monday expert and estate attorney, so he's answering questions for us. So
wonderful.
For those of us who invest out of state, would you present this spreadsheet to the seller over Zoom or call? Or I would do it as a two-step process. I would feel them out. I would use the vernacular. I would just have a conversation like you're having a conversation with friends. If they kind of get it and they want to see it, then I would do the spreadsheet. I think a lot of people would feel like I have to force the spreadsheet. It has to be a crutch. No. Seller financing deals are done as relationships. Don't force it, because you never know that the person that you're showing it to could be an Excel wizard or they could be an Excel novice, and you don't want to freak them out. So please, this is a dance. It's like tango or salsa. It's a dance where two parties need to work together. Don't force it. My experience. Are there possibilities to do like-kind exchange with a combination? Nope, we've talked about that. Like-kind is a 1031. We've answered that earlier. You either do one or the other, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Could you please go back to my W-9 question at the top? Oh, did I miss one? Let's see.
I know we answered a W-9 question, which was, does the seller provide a W-9?
Yeah, so we did do that, yeah.
And they do, so that the buyer can then give them a 1099 for interest paid.
Yeah. So W-9 out, 1099 back.
Exactly.
Okay. So I think we got you rolled in. If not, I don't understand, but I think we got you. All right. Keep going. Rylus, is that because the note holder is not the owner? So nothing property taxes. Yeah. We've talked about that. They're talking about estates. Any strategies to avoid taking all the depreciation recapture? Any strategies for avoiding taking depreciation recapture in year one? I think that's an IRS mandate.
It is a mandate. The only strategy would be for the seller in this example to not do seller financing, but to do a 1031 exchange.
Right, which is a different animal.
Yeah.
But that's why 1031 exchange exists, right? You hear people talking about it. There are people that depreciate to zero and then do a 1031 because they want to get a new basis and start all over. That's kind of what 1031 is. It's either or, not both.
Correct.
It's a strategy. Yep. Oh, he says, never mind. We got it. Is there a different approach to seller financing when doing single family versus small multifamily? Not in my opinion. I mean, other than in single family, you may be dealing with an owner and the owner may have the capital gains exclusion. That one little variable is all I could think of. Bob?
Right. Yeah. I don't see any difference. Maybe the multifamily, it's owned by, a couple of friends. Maybe it's a partner.
Maybe partnered.
Or something like that. So you've got a couple more people to deal with than just the seller.
Zuber usually says your price, my terms. Can we, how the numbers work in a purchase price, not the net benefit is higher than conventional sale. If we get audited by the IRS, what is the benefit of an? Oh, so those are two questions. We'll go to the first one. Can we work on the numbers that work in a purchase price, not the net benefit higher? So I'll take this. So let me share. Oh, what am I doing? So share. So I'm doing this on the fly. I would normally build the spreadsheet ahead of time. So again, right. So for me, there's really two things, right? So the sale price, stop. Okay. Here we go. So back to the question, Jerneel, this is what I usually, let's change these colors. So this is the number, this is what I want the seller to worry about. And then what I am usually worried about are these numbers. And I'm going to highlight them in purple because that's just me. Where's purple? There's purple. I care about that. I care about this. Actually, let me just do all this at once. So these are the numbers that I play with, right? I can let the seller worry about their numbers. And again, all I care about, because again, everything I'm buying, I'm trying to hold forever. So let's say this building is worth 875. Let me make sure all this works out. So 10-year this, and let's say for whatever reason, 3320 is a payment I'm comfortable with, right? We're just playing with this math now. Let's say for whatever reason, so I better write this down. Actually, you know what? Let's say the payment I'm comfortable with is 3,000, not 3,300. Let's play with this. But let's say the seller wants 950. Okay. At this point, this is no go, right? It's a bad idea. But look at this. I could come in here, and this is actually what Matt and I did on his deal. And as I just come in to figure out what a number would work. So in this example, very quick, didn't build anything ahead of time, blah, blah, blah. I can pay a seller 950. I can still do 10% down because they got closing costs and blah, all those things. But what I'm going to ask for is a 30-year fully amortized loan at 1.5% because I am comfortable with $3,000. So if they want 950, I need 30-year money at 1.5. It's really that simple. So that's an example of your price, my terms. And oh, by the way, this building could be worth 850. I could be overpaying by $100,000. Yeah. I don't care.
Yep.
So does that make sense, Bob?
Absolutely. Yep.
There we go. The key is I'm not flipping it, because if you're going to flip this, you're going to lose your ass because you overpaid by $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Very cool. So now back to your, Bob, your question for you. If we get audited by the IRS, what is the benefit having an EA versus CPA representing us? I have no idea.
Okay. So a couple of things. One, when there is an audit, the IRS is auditing the taxpayer.
Not you.
Yeah, not exactly. Not the tax preparer, but the taxpayer.
Correct.
If the taxpayer wants to have an accountant help them with that audit, that's fine. It's almost always the accountant that prepared the return since they're more well-versed in it. Mm-hmm. And it's often the case that the accountant is more well-versed in the tax preparer's tax return than the taxpayer is, because that's the world that the accountant.
Let me just say, I hope that's true in every situation.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think there is an advantage to a CPA or an EA in an audit situation, as long as it's the person that prepared your return. Mm-hmm. They're going to know it well. They're going to know you, and they're going to represent you well. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't get hung up on the two different designations in case of an audit. Okay. If you had prepared your own return and you were looking for somebody to represent you, I would find someone that, if you're a real estate investor, I would try to find an accountant that's a real estate investor.
Yes.
Regardless of whether they're an EA or CPA.
Yeah. I think that is what you just said there is the most important thing. If you're really going to get into this, you're going to do, multiple deals over the years. You're going to build a little small portfolio. I strongly suggest that your accountant, your EA, CPA, be an investor. That's why Bob is on my channel, right? And Bob got a card last week, for example. He's on this because he's an investor. Too many accountants, again, either you're in real estate as a CPA or EA, or you're not, in my opinion.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Thank you for that. Would bonus depreciation also be recaptured when factoring in cost segregation? It's point of sale. Absolutely.
Yes.
And that might be the problem with the 20 unit in the earlier question, is they may have taken a lot. They may have taken 30% or 28% or whatever it worked out to be year one. And that's just could be a huge hit.
Yep.
Which, oh, by the way, is what a lot of syndications have done to make these things look better returns for their investors. And a lot of them have to sell, and that could hurt.
Yeah.
Is there still time to reach out to Bob to help me with my taxes before the 1017 deadline?
Interesting. Yeah. So that is the extended deadline for the 1040. It's Monday, the 17th. So what I would say, we have a lot of work in right now. If your situation is fairly straightforward, all your documents are in order, then
so don't bring you a shoebox, Bob. That would be bad.
No shoeboxes. Then it's likely we'd be able to get it done by the 17th. I would encourage you to reach out to the office on Monday.
Amy, what is the phone? What phone number should Eric call Monday morning, bright and early, to see?
Yeah, 207-729-0041. You won't hear back until Tuesday, when Amy, our office manager, is in. She's out this Monday, but she's in the rest of the week. And she will let you know what we need. She'll send you a link to our client portal and get you started. And we will do all that we can to get you wrapped up by the 17th.
And Eric, I would tell her you came from one rental at a time. Yep. That way she knows that Bob gave you the thumbs up.
That's right. Yeah.
Bob said.
Otherwise I'll be in trouble with Amy.
Exactly.
Make sure she knows.
That's funny. That's hilarious. All right. Looks like the last question we've gotten to. If there are three sellers who don't like each other, may I create three individual notes? Is this good or bad strategy? Same property. I probably would.
You know, I would run this by an attorney.
Okay. That's probably a much better, smarter answer.
It sounds like this is a partnership.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. I was thinking three kids. Anyways, go ahead.
So I don't really know what the situation is here. I don't know who owns this property. So if it is owned by a partnership, I haven't seen this, but maybe there could be three notes. If it's
owned by a family. So we just got clarification. Think three sisters.
Yeah. So three sisters all owning a property together.
Like mom or dad died. They get it now. They want to sell. Think about it that way.
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that question.
So this would be the one where we need Rylus, the estate attorney, to step in to talk about it. Because again, Bob's the accountant, right?
That's right.
This is an asset, part of an estate. So
a Spanish soap opera.
So this is what I am not a CPA, not an estate attorney. I don't pretend to play one, but I am a deal maker.
Yeah.
But I would talk to these three sisters, and I'm just going to make stuff up. It's a 300 grand house.
Mm-hmm.
They each have 100 grand legal T's and C's all done. What I would do is talk about three different payments. What I would probably set up, again, this would have to work out with the contract and all that, is I send one big payment to some intermediary. They then do the math and divide up, and then three checks go out, or wires, or whatever the right word is. That's probably how I would set that up, but you'd have to work with their estate attorney. But again, you're trying to get control of an asset. You are trying to control payments. And then if the only answer is how did the three sisters get their money, figure it out. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And talk with a good attorney.
Talk with an attorney. Yeah. I do not play a CPA or an attorney. Talk to them.
Yeah.
But I can talk about deals all day long.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we got? All right, Bob. So one more time, where can people find you, follow you?
Sure. Yeah. They can find my online at mainbeancounters.com. That's our website, Maine like the state. My phone number will be in that spreadsheet that you all will have a little bit later. I am Bob Langworthy on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I'm either Bob Langworthy or Bean Counter Bob.
I love Bean Counter Bob. I'm going to go look that up.
I'm out there. I can be found. Happy to talk with anyone about your particular tax situations. And we are always welcoming new clients. But if you have a good relationship and just want to talk with someone, happy to have that conversation also.
Awesome. Yeah. Again, folks, this is anybody sent me, you know, who should I go to? This is the guy. This is why he's here. Yes, the spreadsheet will be available, but that will be tomorrow. Let's be clear. I'm going to shut this down, download it, upload it tomorrow. I have the spreadsheet. It will be what you saw with all the colors I've added, just so you have it. You'll be able to play with it tomorrow. But yeah, this is a lot of fun. So Bob, I appreciate you giving us our time. Hopefully you keep having fun. Any more deals before the end of the year, you think?
Not for us. No. I mean, if something came along, we are sitting on some cash and we would be interested in doing another deal. But for now, we want to get this 4-unit
seasoned,
stabilized and seasoned. And yeah.
Very cool, man. Well, thank you for all you do. You are amazing. And again, the Lumberjack just sings your praises almost every week. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. I really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Yep, goodbye, all.